Good morning. You're tuned into Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear how the Navajo Nation, the Diné, are struggling amidst the coronavirus pandemic, with children and young people now dealing with emotional and mental health issues as they try to process the extreme loss that they're experiencing as a result of ongoing and historic health disparities and inequities. We'll hear from one Boulder County woman who's a Diné spiritual leader. She's been working to get supplies and funds to those in need on the reservation. Then two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we take a look at fake news with Professor Nolan Higdon of Project Censored. His new book that is coming out in the next 3 weeks, Anatomy of Fake News, takes an historic look at what fake news is all about. He talks about how Donald Trump is really just the tip of the iceberg. But most importantly, he talks about how we can develop strategies and understanding so we can arm ourselves in the face of an onslaught of fake news and find out which news sources are the best ones. And it's no surprise to hear community-centred media is part of the solution. It's all ahead of us, but first we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, Governor Jared Polis extended the state's disaster emergency order for another 30 days. Colorado Politics reports that it's the fifth time he's issued that order since March 10th. The extension comes as there is no end in sight to the COVID-19 pandemic, and with outbreaks reported at more than 70 locations during June. Last night on MSNBC, Polis said he worries about the growing outbreaks in Texas and Arizona, with people from those states traveling to Colorado. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment reports the average age of people in the state testing positive for the virus has dropped from the upper 40s in April to 32 years old now. Nine News reports that the age groups under 50 make up less than 1% of the statewide deaths. However, a state spokesperson said it's only a matter of time before transmission in young people increases transmission in older and at-risk populations because younger people are much less likely to show symptoms and they can silently spread the virus. Denver's coronavirus testing site at the Pepsi Center closed its gates after noon yesterday. As demand grew so high, city officials were concerned that lab capacity, which is already limited, would delay test results further. The Denver Post reports that the early closure of the site is the latest indication that testing capacity in Colorado remains fragile, with cases surging in parts of the U.S. and shortages of testing supplies nationwide. Meanwhile, a new study shows that more than twice as many women than men dropped out of the labor force in Colorado as the pandemic forced business closures and layoffs earlier this year. The state's unemployment rate peaked at around 12% in April and has since dropped to 10%. Colorado Politics reports that before the pandemic, the gap between male and female workforce participants was less than 4 percentage points, but now the difference is greater than 7. An author of the new report done by the nonpartisan Common Sense Institute in Greenwood Village said one of the largest drops in the labor force was seen in women over the age of 35. After a two-week break without meetings, Boulder City Council reconvened last night and received an update on how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting local residents. Boulder County Public Health Executive Director Jeff Zayak said the county's five-day average of the new coronavirus 19 cases is back down to the lowest levels reported in late May. According to Zayak, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention predicts cases will continue to level off for most age groups.
Again, you've seen this multiple times. It just illustrates we are staying flat across the region in terms of hospitalizations. This is where CDPHE's update, they expect that unless there's some kind of massive change, that we would continue to see flat numbers as we go into the summer. And one thing that could drive a change, just people that are in that older age category. So once you're into that 50 to 59 and above age category, you start to look at hospitalizations and you can see greater numbers of hospitalizations.
The local health department issued a press release Tuesday reminding parents that children older than 2 years of age should wear face coverings, noting that kids can carry and transmit the virus to others, including vulnerable adults. Zayak said face coverings for children younger than 12 were not mandated at the start of the pandemic, but they are nonetheless recommended. the climate lawsuit filed by the city of Boulder, Boulder County, and San Miguel County against giant oil companies will remain in state court. The defendant oil companies had wanted to move the case to a federal court, which they consider to be more friendly. However, yesterday, a federal appeals court denied the oil company's request, and so the case will stay in state court in Boulder. The counties and the city are seeking damages from the oil giants for what they say are the effects of climate change. Denver's Climate Action Task Force released a lengthy report yesterday, making a number of recommendations that could change the way life looks in the city. The Denverite reports that the group urged immediate and decisive action to reduce the impact on the climate and to prepare for climate change. Among the recommendations, homes and buildings should be retrofit to support energy efficiency, and there should be stricter requirements for new buildings. The bus system should be expanded, made fully electric, and more affordable. There should be an investment in infrastructure for electric vehicles and an end to the use of natural gas for heating and cooking as much as possible. The recommendations are the result of months of meetings among Denver citizens appointed to the Climate Action Task Force. In response to the report, Denver Council President Jolan Clark said it's huge, and he thinks it's an extraordinary heavy lift, but he thinks anything less is a failure. A deputy in the Denver Sheriff's Department will lose 4 days of pay for using a chokehold on a jail inmate. Officials of the Department of Public Safety determined that Deputy Sean Radigan used inappropriate force when he crossed his arm over an inmate's neck while transporting him to a cell. The Denver Post reports that the man was not injured, and there are no reports he complained of not being able to breathe. He declined to be interviewed for the internal investigation. Along the Front Range today and tomorrow, it will be hot and sunny with highs in the mid-90s. Gusty winds are possible today. Friday could see temperatures reach 100 in places. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, Native American reservations and their people have suffered greatly during this COVID-19 pandemic. What we're seeing is a continuation of generations of inequities and trauma. Right now, there are so many people at the Navajo Nation, the Diné, that is considered one of the communities that is most impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. Well, Dr. Maria Michael, who's a Lakota Diné spiritual leader who lives right here in Boulder County, she has been working to raise funds for the Diné and Hopi reservations. We heard from her back in June. She's recently returned from the Navajo Nation, and she shares her perspective on what's been happening there.
We just came back from the Diné reservation. We were blessed by Denise Labadie Snell, who as a quilter worked through all the other quilters around Boulder County as well as Fort Collins and Colorado Springs to donate 8 sewing machines and enough fabric so that the Diné people who have electricity, since many of them have no electricity and no water to drink or to wash their hands, but the ones who have electricity can have a sewing machine to actually start making masks, even though we've been providing masks. One of the problems that's happening on the reservation is that there is so much devastation and so much death and so much illness that there's also, when people are being released from the hospital who still have symptoms because there's not enough room in the hospitals, they're either being shipped out of state or they are told to go back to their homes and quarantine, but all the homes are multi-generational, and there's really no way to quarantine the way many of us who are privileged can quarantine in a room, a separate room in a house. For the children, it's especially hard because they don't understand what's happening. They're losing aunties, they're losing uncles, they're losing parents. And they don't understand this invisible virus that is just hitting the reservation. And people are just, they go to bed and then they don't get up. And they don't even get to the hospital. The hospitals are completely overwhelmed. The doctors and nurses are overwhelmed. There's so much trauma upon trauma. And there's not enough people there who are trained in trauma. And so there are a lot of people, there are wonderful people on the res. They're all taking in the kids. The clans are taking in. They're all trying to rally around them. But the kids don't even have some of the basic necessities that normal kids in a privileged society like we have here in Boulder and Longmont and Louisville and Lafayette, they don't have toys. They don't have distractions. They don't have, many of them don't have TV or electricity. And so, yes, they can play outside, but they don't know how to process all this trauma and all this loss. And it's not just one person or two people. It could be 10 people in their lives. It's too much for even the adults to handle. I have a relative who last week buried four of his clan brothers, and then there was an elder that passed. It's just, it's kind of nonstop. And there are people who've not yet been touched. I mean, people are really trying very hard to wear masks when they have them. There are hundreds of thousands of people on the reservation. We've mailed, there are two, us and another organization are mailing masks, all handmade masks by like Boulder mask makers and quilters all over the range here, but it's still not enough. That's why the sewing machines were necessary, why we were so grateful for all the donations, because, and all the donations of fat, we had enough fabric almost for a quilt shop. I mean, that's what it looked like in my car. I'm sure it wasn't enough for a quilt shop, but so that they can also start making them at a speed which they need. I mean, we don't have any masks for the children. We've been only working with masks for the adults because they at least have the understanding of why they have to wear them. And this, you know, some of the signs that you look at, how they show being two sheep's distance away to understand, you know, the 6-foot distancing and why it's important. But the children are really suffering. And so we've just started a drive, thanks to one of our relatives' suggestions, since we're going out July 20th, to get books from ages 3 all the way up through high school, and to get books and journals that children can begin to write about their feelings. They can begin to write down their questions so that elders and medicine people can start to try to help them understand what's happening. But it's hard for the adults to understand what's happening. You know, these are people who have lived so below the poverty line their whole lives. And now to have this pandemic come, they're saying it's doubly worse than what New York was at its peak. And there's no assistance. No assistance from our government at all, except the body bags that were delivered.
To put this into context, this is trauma heaped upon generations of trauma. And these are children already struggling. Houses without running water, houses without electricity. These are children who are living without the basic necessities that everybody takes for granted.
And even just the food that they don't have in the remote areas. I mean, our relatives have been making boxes of food. And now some of that food is being, because there's not enough food for everyone, that, you know, some of the deliveries are now being given to a more distant area. So when we were just there, we bought a Sewa International, which is a Hindu organization, donated 150 pounds of rice, donated cases of beans, donated cases of corn, small cases, but they donated flour. But that's not enough to feed tens of thousands of people in one area. And the remote areas, like when our relatives are going out, you know, none of the roads are paved. The car alignments go out. Their axles break. You know, these are all people who are working so hard every day to try to get people food and water. We just had a woman named Bree Stranahan, who was up in Netherlands, who donated her one-ton truck to drive out. J&L Distributing donated a one-ton pallet of water, and she drove it out to Alamosa, along with four more sewing machines and more fabric and a red ironing board and whatever else we could stick in her car, and met our relatives in Alamosa, and then they drove it back to the reservation, so that places where you can't, even though a lot of our money's been used for water tanks and gas and things like that to deliver, places like dialysis centers, recovery centers, they need bottled water because it needs to be sterile. It needs to be clean, and you can't just pour water in a bucket. And so there's just so much need.
You're going back July 20th, and you're hoping to bring books and journals.
Toys, journals, notebooks, sewing machines, fabric. We would love donations of large amounts of food, rice. We've been having a hard time connecting to a lot of the bean suppliers. Don't have beans, and like in the Cortez Four Corner area, they're out. And we're looking for dried beans and things that can be stored. One of our relatives has a part of a storage shed, and another relative is going to start renting a storage shed so that we can start collecting food, as much food as we can, so that we can keep spreading out the food, not only now, but when the winter hits and it's minus 30, we can't get over the mountain passes to bring them anything. So we are trying to build as much as we can now, but there are actually, for everything we're bringing, there's somebody there who needs to eat now. And so it's hard to get ahead of the curve, so to speak. So we're just trying to go out as much as we can. The 20th, the 21st is our traditional Sundance tree day. So we're going out to pray, and then we'll stay. And that's why we need another car full of, there's no point a car going out without it being full. They can get to us on our website, www.drmariamichael.com. There's a GoFundMe on the website, so you can donate money. We can really use it. You know, we need to buy more water tanks, as it sounds, you know, for the back of people's pickup trucks, because the more pickup trucks that have water tanks, the more area that can be covered. I mean, it's 27,000 square miles. But this is, we need to reinforce to everyone that this is not just happening on the Diné and Hopi reservations. It's just one of the largest, with a lot of different terrain. But all the reservations, Pine Ridge, I'm part Lakota, everywhere, there are people who don't have electricity and water. You know, last year when I was at a meeting of the Oglala board, and they were trying to save the Black Hills, they talked about over 350,000 people having no electricity and no water in minus 40 degree weather. How can people survive? And this is still happening in this day and age. And the food that's coming, that's delivered, only comes once a week. So if you don't have a car and you don't have a means to get to town, whichever town that is close by, if you're disabled, if you're elderly and you live in a remote area and you don't have a car, your chances of survival and getting that food that's getting dropped off is pretty small. We had written to World Central Kitchen, to Jose Andres, who went to Puerto Rico and went to other places. He even went to Rough Rock and dropped off boxes, but he had no idea how massive and how big and how much was needed. I mean, what he did was, I can't tell you, within 3 weeks he responded. But there's so much, and even Doctors with Borders have come to the res, but it's not enough for six hospitals and clinics, and people are being sent home still not in a safe way, or they're being sent home with machinery. We're starting to try to look into generators, because if they're being sent home with machinery and they have no electricity, they can't stay on the machines that they're being sent home with from the hospital. So it's everything becomes a catch 22, you know, so there's so many things that are needed. Generators, you know, to keep, you know, we've been trying to figure out if we could reach organizations or companies that have manufacturing companies who create solar, so that we could actually invite them, instead of going to Mexico or other places, to actually build their manufacturing companies on native land, where they can teach people how to make the solar silicon chips, actually give them jobs, actually help bring them out of poverty. And at the same time, there's sun there all the time. And so, but we just don't know people. So, I mean, there's a lot of dreaming that's happening with us and relatives, a lot of trying to figure out how to, you know, there is a wonderful man named Steve Edmonds and Lorna Donaldson, Lorna's an organic farmer who's thinking of coming to Colorado, who's done some amazing work. And Steve Edmonds is trying to figure out how to use industrial hemp to clean up the uranium that's never been cleaned up by our government, that's polluted the water. And so there are children, a big significant portion of the reservation's water is so polluted from the uranium that people are being born irradiated. I mean, it's in this day and age in 2020, I mean, all the parents today on this day who are bearing children, if they could only imagine what that must be like for the mothers and fathers to know they can't even have water, clean water, so that their children are born healthy. It's just not believable that no one is covering any of this. It's just heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking.
It's Dr. Maria Michael Lajota, Diné spiritual leader. She lives here in Boulder County, but she is working to gather funds and supplies for the Diné, for the Navajo Nation. And as we heard, she's going back down on July 20th. She's hoping to bring toys, children's books, journals, so that the children can write about what they're living through right now, which is the most difficult conditions, the hardest hit community really in the country from the COVID-19 pandemic. And you can find out how you can contribute at drmariamichael.com, drmariamichael.com. And as we heard, people aren't talking about this, and that's why it's so vital that we have community media like KGNU to continue to bring you these stories. And we heard a month ago from Dr. Michael, we're going to be checking in with her continuously as we continue to shine a spotlight on those sectors of our society, on those communities that have been marginalised and consistently silenced. And that is why KGNU has been standing strong for more than four decades. So to help Dr. Michael in her efforts to get supplies that are desperately needed, you can connect with her directly through her website, drmariamichael.com. That's drmariamichael.com, drmariamichael.com. And so many people are so incredibly generous. The last time Dr. Michael was on KGNU, she said there was an influx of contributions. So we do hope the same will happen, because we know how generous our KGNU listeners are. We know that directly because so many people have been calling us this morning. A big thanks to Joe from Fort Collins. He's a fan of the local news. Thank you so much for your kind words. We appreciate you, Joe. Thank you for listening in Fort Collins. Big thanks to Fred in Westminster for donating. He says he loves just about every part of the radio station. He enjoys all of the DJs, and he says the news that you need, that's what you get. KGNU gives the truth. Thank you, Fred. Thanks to Eileen from Centennial for increasing her monthly giving, giving a little bit extra, and a brand new solar member. Thank you, Grace Hood, for coming on board today. We welcome you into the fold. Thank you for your contribution. And Tom, thanks for calling in to increase your monthly giving as well. Tom's an existing solar member, and he says KGNU is a big part of his life, and he wants to see it continue and bring the diverse and broad-reaching programming from the news and informational shows to the music, which covers every possible format. Keep up the good work. We will, Tom, with your contribution today. Thank you to everyone who has been calling us and going to kgnu.org. It really is truly inspiring to see how the community gets together to support these causes, whether it's the non-profits in our community, whether it's folks like Dr. Maria Michael, or whether it's KGNU itself. kgnu.org. Up next, it's Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And tell them.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Robert Reich points out that Wyoming has a population of 578,000, 92% of which is white, and two U.S. senators. Vermont has a population of 624,000, 94% of which is white, and two U.S. senators. Meanwhile, the District of Columbia has a population of 705,000, that's more, 47% of its residents are black, and D.C. has zero U.S. senators. So those living in our nation's capital do not get the same rights as their fellow Americans enjoy, like a meaningful vote, real representation, and a full voice in their government. That's because the Constitution says that only states can be represented in Congress. And given that D.C. has a majority black and brown population, the fight for D.C. statehood is part of the fight for racial justice in America. On June 26, the House tried to rectify this by passing H.R. 51, the Washington, D.C. Admission Act. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser issued the following statement after the House of Representatives voted 232 to 180 to pass the act. Quote, "Today, with this historic vote, D.C. is closer than we have ever been to becoming the 51st state. It is past time to fix this injustice. It is true that D.C. is more brown and more liberal than many other states, but the issue of taxation without representation was settled more than 200 years ago with the Declaration of Independence, and disenfranchising more than 700,000 tax-paying Americans is wrong no matter what our politics or demographics. Who we elect is our business, and denying us statehood based on who we might send to Congress is both undemocratic and un-American. Now, just as generations of Americans have worked out over the centuries to build a more perfect union, we too are ready to seize this moment. Today, we stand on the shoulders of generations of Washingtonians who demanded access to our nation's democracy, from the abolitionists of the 1800s to the Home Rule activists of the 1900s. On behalf of all Washingtonians, I congratulate Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton. I was born without representation, but I swear I will not die without representation. Together, we will achieve D.C. statehood, and when we do, we will look back on this day and remember all who stood with us on the right side of history, close quote. If you have thoughts on H.R. 51, the Washington, D.C. Admission Act, as it moves from House to the Senate, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It is 8:30. Up next, it's Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I want to say a few things about food poisoning today. Hopefully you've never had it and you never will, but if you have, you know what I'm talking about. It can be really terrible and cause dehydration. So if it's not an emergency, a great remedy is 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar and 2 teaspoons of honey in a cup of warm water. Rather than drinking it all at once, where it may come right back up, just have a little sip every 10 minutes. 2 charcoal capsules taken with a cup of water can also be taken. It will cause one's stool to look black, but that is not a reason for concern. Another remedy is umeboshi plum paste, and this is one of my favorite don't leave home without it remedies. It's made from technically a type of apricot, Prunus mume, and it's available in pills. It's also available in a paste, and it's also available in little balls. The pills don't have salt in it, neither does the concentrate, but the umeboshi plum paste does have salt in it. It's considered one of the most alkalinizing foods, and you mix a teaspoon of it into a cup of warm water and sip it, and it's really so quick-acting and will help things like nausea and diarrhea. It's also a great thing to take with you when you're traveling because it can help prevent you from getting sick. Ginger and peppermint tea can help calm an upset stomach from food poisoning. So ginger and peppermint tea, they're available everywhere. Come on, we're in Colorado, homeland of many great herb companies. But you could also, if you were in a pinch, put 1 drop of peppermint essential oil in a glass of water. Make sure it's a pure, unadulterated essential oil. And food poisoning really should be paid attention to. It's possible that pathogens might still be in the body. It may be that there's a food that is still lurking in your refrigerator and you don't want to eat it again, or maybe a restaurant needs to be alerted that there's something not right. So try to determine the cause. And when the person feels like eating again, good things to ease back into food consumption are things like miso soup or broth, applesauce, yogurt. Taking a probiotic supplement can help recolonize the digestive tract with friendly flora, and I would do 1 capsule maybe 3 times a day. Garlic can also be taken as a capsule or as a food. It'll help kill any lingering pathogens that might have been acquired. Also, taking some vitamin C for a few days can help protect against a resurgence of the nasties. So I wish you a safe and healthy summer and enjoying all kinds of healthy food. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Brigitte Mars and Naturally, sharing her herbal wisdom for so many years right here on KGNU. And it's thanks to you, our listeners.